revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a return guest, somebody who is really just a beautiful person to interview because she was so knowledgeable, but more importantly, she was able to explain in a way that laymen can understand. And today we're going to speak with Dr. Buksoff, and she is a functional pharmacist, a mental fitness and health coach, an herbal educator, and lifelong learner of the healing arts. She's the creator of Build Your Holistic Herbal Practice, a course mentoring other healthcare professionals in clinical herbal as well as business skills. She guides practitioners to rediscover their passion for medicine by expanding their mind and clinical skills to include natural, holistic, alternative, and herbal medicine from which conventional medical practice originated. She believes in honoring plants as food and medicine for sustainable and sovereign health. She's also a functional medicine pharmacist as part of the Farm to Table telehealth platform and the host of the Holistic Pharmacy podcast. She uses her multidisciplinary background to educate patients about the least invasive and most natural methods for healing the spirit, body, and mind. And her truly holistic approach helps women embody the best versions of themselves and lovingly celebrate the skin they're in. When she's not studying, Dr. Buksoff likes to dance, paint, and tinker with various concoctions such as tea blends, meals, do-it-yourself projects. And she lives with her husband and two adorable children and cats in New York City. And Dr. Buksoff, I want to thank you so much for joining me today because I think this is a conversation, again, that people don't know that they need. And I get a lot more questions from patients about how they can come off of medication and how they can do things naturally to fix the problem instead of just medicating the symptom.
Yeah, it's absolutely my pleasure to be back on the show. And I'm excited to contribute in whichever way I can to this conversation.
Well, I'm sure you're going to have a lot to contribute. So let's get rolling. You know, one of the things that I said in the intro that people don't realize is that the allopathic medicine wasn't always the in the forefront, right? I mean, natural medicine, functional medicine, herbalism really was kind of the underpinning of our healthcare system before it got taken over. Is that true?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think in my case, I was fascinated to learn, even though I don't consider myself a history buff or anything like that. But history and politics are so intertwined with healing and medicine that I think we just don't really get that education a lot of the times when we are a clinician. It's just sort of, you know, follow the guidelines and here's the data and we're practicing evidence-based model. And we don't really learn how we came to that way. And also, as somebody who is an immigrant from another country, I could tell that we kind of practice differently here. And just as an example, a pharmacist education would include herbs and lots of other things, including nutraceuticals, you know, and things that are sort of in the realm of anything from diet and lifestyle all the way to synthetic pharmaceuticals are generally included in most other countries when you train as a pharmacist. And only here in America do we have this clear division. And it did come from a political agenda from sometime in the 1900s when the Flexner Report came out. It was the early 1900s, actually. And from that stemmed a whole bunch of reforms in the models that were practiced for healthcare. And then pharmaceutical companies came online and they started to have this quote unquote evidence-based approach to synthesize chemicals that was much cheaper than sourcing them from plants and herbs and foods. And then we had the insurance model come online and that sort of skewed everything towards the stakeholders in this type of consumerism model.
I think that's an excellent overview. And, you know, what people think about, at least from a medical education perspective, they've tried to make it seem as if artificial and man-made is somehow better than what nature is able to provide. And, you know, it's wonderful that you have such a frame of reference, because you can speak to this from an inside perspective. I mean, for those who may not be aware, everything, not everything, but a lot of things that are synthesized are takes on what nature has already provided. Am I correct?
Yes, you got that exactly right. So essentially, humans have a long history with plant medicine ever since humans arrived on this planet, right? We can talk about the evolution model, but we co-evolved with other things that were already on this planet. Of course, this also depends on your religious views and where you think humanity arose from. But for the most part, the scientific explanation is that we co-evolved with the other beings on this planet, and we are this sentient conscious being that is intelligent. And all the other life forms here also have their own sentience and conscience. And so the thing is, we all co-evolved. And whenever animals, including the human animal, needed some sort of healing substance, well, first of all, we need sustenance in terms of food and nourishment from the physical planet all around us, mostly plants, right? I always quote Michael Pollan, eat real food, mostly plants and not too much. That's a great motto, I think, to kind of navigate the complex playground that we find ourselves in figuring out what's the right thing to eat. So number one, we do need some kind of physical nourishment, and we learned which plants were safe and which plants were nutritious and which plants are local, right, depending on where we originated from. And we passed it down, right? Our ancestors passed it down to us, and then we kind of knew how to navigate it. And whoever did get ill, there were people, there were medicine, men and women, shamans, different titles that we can assign to them, healers, that were more so in communion with these plants and were able to utilize them for medicinal purposes. So not just nourishment, but medicine. And so eventually this coevolution with plants and mushrooms, right, and even different things. Now we're learning so much about the microbiome inside and outside and how that all interrelates. And only in the last century or so, as I mentioned, with Flexner report and a lot of advances in chemistry and petrochemicals that were being discovered and how we can manipulate them and synthesize these compounds. But what we were trying to do is actually mimic the compounds that are already found in nature, like you said. So the thing is, we figured out there's a source, right? There's this petroleum, and we can use it for oil, and we can use it for powering plants and the Industrial Revolution and all of that. And then all the extra stuff we can just take and we can manipulate it chemically and create substances that mimic those in nature. And that can make some people very rich if they own the preliminary source, right? And it also becomes a little bit easier if you can manipulate things, but you don't actually have to go out and commune with this nature, as I was sharing, because now we're gearing towards a faster paced lifestyle where we need workers and we need them to have, you know, a 9-to-5 plus lifestyle. And so we're trying to gear up for this very easy, convenient lifestyle of, you know, here's the stuff that we scientifically have predetermined your body needs to survive. And let's just package it up so we can earn money and then we can buy that stuff and consume it. And so that's the model we now find ourselves in.
You know, the sad part about this whole mindset of it's somehow equal and it's parity, these synthetic medications have this really getting larger, in my opinion, and more dangerous side effect profile. So I can't imagine, you know, you make a tea, you grow it in your garden, it has a very, how can I put it, sophisticated approach to how the body takes it in and how it uses it. Do you think that's the same thing when we're talking about these synthetic drugs, where the side effects. People are taking medicines now really for the side effect of the medication that they're taking. And there's a really tight profile between whether it's beneficial and then if you take too much, it becomes a toxin. So, I mean, should they be afraid, but should they think twice about the mindset of if it's something that's written as a prescription, it must be better than nature?
Yeah, you know, I think you got that exactly right. And I think this is a question that comes up a lot regarding safety. And the question is, well, what is the safest, right? Because as creatures of habit and as survival driven species, we definitely want to look at safety first. And also as healthcare professionals, we take the Hippocratic oath of doing no harm. So safety is definitely a priority. And we can have blanket statements that we probably have heard, like, you know, if it's natural, it's better. Well, that's not necessarily true, because if you look around the natural world, there's definitely predators. And of course, we're at the top of that ecological food chain a lot of the time, but we still have predators, whether they're from plant or insect or animal worlds, we do have natural predators as well that we need to be wary of. And so whether it's poisonous plants or insects that are just form the natural flora and fauna of a space where you're native to or wherever you live, that's something that we definitely want to be paying attention to. And when it comes to electing and ingesting medications that are supposed to be healing, right? That's sort of the interpretation. When you take your medicine, the medicine is supposed to help your body heal. But then when we look at the context of taking chemical synthetic medications that are petroleum-based, as I shared, which was also sort of mind-shattering to me when I learned that, quite recently, actually, because I guess I never really even questioned where is the sourcing from this synthetic, where's the backbone coming from? So bottom line is that we have to approach everything that we choose to surround ourselves in, the environment we're in, and what we ingest. And of course, we focus on the controllables. What can we control? Because unfortunately, we do live in a very toxic world ever since the Industrial Revolution. And the things that are just in our air and our water. And so I think we need better regulations. And for that, we need to take a look at what the data actually is showing. And the problem is we need to ask better questions, right? So if we're to conduct evidence-based practice models, then we really need to look for what's a worthwhile question to ask and what's a worthwhile statistic to take as significant, because that's a whole other can of worms. But to answer your question more directly, we need to evaluate the safety index of every single substance. And so just because it's natural doesn't automatically make it better. However, the synthetics definitely do skew towards the side of a more narrow therapeutic index, like you mentioned. So this is when the dose that's needed to have a therapeutic effect is very, very close to the dose that is needed for a toxic effect. So when those two things are very closely related, it's just we need to monitor it that much better. And I absolutely would recommend that we think twice when evaluating the need for such interventions. And that's because our body, like I mentioned, did co-evolve and is designed to have its own sophisticated process of ingesting and digesting and absorbing, and then our microbiome activating the substances that we ingest from whole food form. So this means everything that is a whole plant, let's say, if we're eating plants, it has a very sophisticated profile in terms of its complexity of phytochemicals and macronutrients that it has. And our body is designed to break that down accordingly. And when we feed our body food-like substances, including medications, which is an isolated compound that is not only synthetic, but it's just one compound, not, like I mentioned, a whole bunch of compounds that are part of a whole food. And it has inactive ingredients too, to help bind and to maybe give some flavor or some other kind of inert action, supposedly inert. They still all have a role, and our body doesn't quite know how to process those, number one, very efficiently. So it's kind of like, you know, it sends out a little bit of a confused signal, you know, and our body doesn't really know, is this food, is this beneficial for us? I'm not sure what this is, because it hasn't been around for that long and we haven't co-evolved with it. But then it, you know, it does process it, and then our body needs to detoxify from that too. And our body's receptors start having a whole negative feedback cycle, because it's not used to this compound being there in this dose, in this therapeutic/toxic dose. And so we really need to be careful in monitoring. And I would say we're better off, like, the least amount of medications or any other interventions, the less that we take on, the better, because that just takes off a body burden. So if we can use a plant instead of a medication, or if we can use a prayer instead of a plant, to quote another famous quote, that's what I would say. Use the most gentle approach first.
I think that's a great, great piece of advice, and also a great place to take our first break, because when we come back, I want to ask a different wing, a preventative power of herbal remedies. So let's take our first break. You're Living in the Solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Marina Buksoff, and you can go to her website. She has a few. One is marinabuksoff.com, and there you can listen to her podcast. You can also go to a different website where she has medicine, functional medicine consults, which is great, because that means you don't have to be in the same state or city, and you can still partake of her knowledge. And that's Dr. Marina Buksoff, DrMarinaBuksoff.azova, AZOVA.com. And we'll have that in the show notes after the show, so people can actually, you know, get some help if they need it. Now, Dr. Buksoff, we gave a great overview of the power of the plant and the power of staying away from man-made. But now I wanted to go into the more preventative side, from a standpoint of what people should take, or how they should access herbal medication or herbal teas or whatever to stay healthy. What are the things that you would recommend that people, as a primer, should do, maybe daily, maybe weekly, just to, you know, help their body help itself?
Yeah, you know, I would say the first thing is probably education, right? Because we did just talk about safety. And so we definitely want to make sure that we take, first of all, the approach of, I like the approach of autonomy and self-sufficiency. So I would like to plant the seed, so to speak, for everybody to know that they can have some control, right? Maybe not all the control that we would wish, right? Controlling the environment and the regulations that I mentioned earlier, but you do have so much control of what you put in your body on a daily basis, what you expose yourself to. So you can definitely start out on the herbal journey by learning a little bit more about those safe herbs to start with. And maybe if you want to speak to an expert just to speed up the process, or you know, enroll in some kind of beginner herbalism program, that could be a good first step, I think, because when you have that knowledge, then you can navigate the system that much more effectively. And so for the most, I think, efficient path, I would say speak to somebody knowledgeable, right? Because they can refer you to the next best step. So whether that's an herb shop or an herbalist that you are aware of in your area locally, or some online source that you come across and trust, please feel free to reach out to me on the website, as Dr. Lena was sharing. And I'm happy to give you the next best step, whether that's a full-on consult or just a reference or a resource for you. So that's number one step, I would say, is just to make sure that you are starting your journey in a safe way and you have some sort of guidance in that department. So whenever you speak to somebody like that, you know, again, with the safety in mind, I think it would be pretty safe to start off with some gentle tease, like you mentioned. You know, teas are very easy to digest. Like we talked about, the body is very intelligent and it recognizes things in its whole food form. But even more than that, the tea will actually take out the phytochemicals that are water soluble from the plant, which again tend to be pretty safe. And they will extract minerals and vitamins from the herbs, and your body is going to have a really easy time to digest those things, even if you do have a compromised system or you're dealing with a chronic illness. So I do think it's a great place to start. And just so you know, I am an herbalist, so there is a ton of different teas out there. It's not just black and green and oolong and whatever other types of teas you're used to seeing. You know, you might be familiar with chamomile. So that's a very common tea that even exists in tea bags, right? In different kinds of supermarkets that are very accessible. But for a true herbal approach, I would say get the loose leaf herbal teas from a reputable company. And I also do have some resources to help you with that process of navigating where to source herbs from. So make sure to visit and get my best references guide. And so there are some websites that have very quality herbs. Again, your local herb shop can also refer you to which brands are good. And I actually recommend the more local you can make it, like if you don't have to go online and order it, and if you have a way to access an herbalist or an herb shop locally, that's really the best place to start. And again, starting with an herb such as chamomile, like something very gentle, very safe, right, that we even give to pregnant women and babies. Also spices, you know, adding spices to foods such as fennel, you can make that into a tea, or you can flavor your food. Sage, rosemary, you know, all of our culinary spices, turmeric, cumin, black pepper, they're wonderful. And it's really hard to overdose on spices, right? So if you can consume it as a spice, you can definitely consume it as a tea if it's tasty enough. And so that's where I would start.
Well, that's a really good overview, because maybe people actually just think of a few teas, as you said. And when you talk about making spice teas from spices, let's say turmeric, for example, people have been using that now for things like our anti-inflammatory or to help blood flow in the brain. Is that something that is valid?
Absolutely. I mean, turmeric is one of the most studied plants, I believe. And when you look at the literature, it's been studied in all kinds of formulations and dosage forms. And what we know about turmeric is it's actually great as a like liposoluble substance, which really means that it gets absorbed and the most bioavailability happens when you combine it with a fat or an oil, which is why you'll see it in things like golden chai lattes, right? You have some sort of milk in there. And so some herbs, like I mentioned, are going to be great just as a straight up tea, as a water soluble infusion. And some you actually do want to either eat it with some food that has some fat or make a beverage that has some fat in there to really help extract all of the beneficial compounds.
And what about things like hemp? I've been seeing that as well as something to help with inflammation and pain. Is that something that people should take a look at?
Yeah, you know, I think you're naming some of the most popular herbs, which is great. I love that they're making an appearance in mainstream culture. And the thing is, yes, these two plants, turmeric and hemp cannabis, are amazing. And they just have so many applications. Turmeric, because of inflammation, as you said, even you know, in the central nervous system and also in muscles and joints. And this is because so many of us are having degenerative sort of chronic conditions cropping up. And also it plays a huge role in your digestive system as well and your liver. So again, just great for the average everyday person, but especially in a, you know, elderly aging population that tend to have more risk of chronic diseases. So again, just a great choice, and also pretty safe. And as long as you're having it with some fat, you should have optimal absorption. And again, just using it as a spice is something that you can add into your routine. So the hemp, right, it's got some political background, right, where it has been demonized for quite some time because of the psychoactive components of THC. But now we're seeing all of the cannabinoids and terpenes and resins and all of these other constituents in the plant have amazing, also anti-inflammatory and emotional regulating properties. So great for the nervous system and also for pain. And we are now seeing that a CBD medication is now on the market, Epidiolex, that is used for seizures. So, you know, even mainstream is catching on and they can no longer deny that we need to study this beautiful plant medicine in more depth. And it is valid, right? It does have a lot of evidence, even though it has been restricted a lot and demonized, like I said. So that just becomes a matter of navigating and advocating politically, because I feel like there is still a lot of stigma around this plant medicine, and we still want to take a look at sourcing. And now there's talk of pharmaceutical companies taking over some of the production, and that is going to definitely come with some pros and cons in terms of regulations and quality out on the market. So again, it just all comes down to sourcing and trusting the companies or the farmers or the growers that we're dealing with, vetting them and making sure that we're actually getting the substance that we are looking to get. And it all just depends on that relationship we form. So whether it's through a practitioner that or an educator or somebody else that you trust that can refer you to a good quality supplier, or again, just doing the research in your area, whatever is more local to you. Again, as an herbalist, I feel like ethically, philosophically, it is very, very important to consume foods and herbs that are the closest to you, and they will actually have the highest quality and level of phytochemicals and vibrational even benefit for you to consume those things, and also you honoring the land that you are on and also your lineage, you know. So if you're sourcing an exotic plant from the Amazon, that may not be the most responsible use of resources.
Makes sense. I mean, it's about being mindful and thoughtful about everything you do and why you do it, right?
Absolutely.
On that note, let's take our second break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Buksoff, and before the break, you did a really wonderful job of making us mindful. It's not just going through the motions. It has to be a thoughtful process. And you mentioned food, and I think of it the same way. You want to eat food from people you know, ideally, people in your community. It's like everything is synergistic. You're helping them. They're staying open. There's this positive flow. And I think energy and vibration are extremely important. I think people overlook both of those things. But we're vibrational, right? We're energetic beings. Every cell is a battery. So either we improve our health by, I guess, injecting energy into what we do, or we sap it. And for me, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but most disease states is because the energy level is dropped or you can't somehow replete it. Is that one way to think about it?
Yeah, you know, in herbalism, we have this concept called energetics. And it is one of the most confusing concepts, I think, to talk about in this day and age, especially in the more scientifically geared and trained communities, right, where they're not really taught at all about vibration, other than that's how you make sound or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so we divorce the emotional and spiritual and energetic parts of our nature as humans, because we're, again, so wired and groomed to think about things as, you know, a physical 3D reality, and viewing the body more like a machine, right? Like, if we could just figure out which way the gears are turning and what connects to what, then, you know, we can give them a chemical substance or some other intervention and completely, you know, fill in that gap and fix the gear. And unfortunately, that's not how the body actually works. There's a lot more at play. And we keep mentioning this word sophisticated because it's true. And we haven't yet figured out all of the interconnections and the complexities. And that's why it's very difficult to, quote unquote, fix with one simple intervention, everything that has caused those gears to start shifting a certain way. And so I like to think of the body, and this is thanks to my teachers, my mentors, as doing the best it can with the resources that it has available to it, right? So at all points of our evolution, the goal of the body is to survive first, right? And prioritize imminent survival, right? And look for imminent danger and make sure that it can get you from the day to day and moment to moment. And it will prioritize that over long-term health because, right, you can, God forbid, get hit by a bus or something. So it doesn't really care as much about long-term care health as it does about in the moment. And so it's going to start turning on processes that need to be turned on in order to get you the most amount of health or comfort for the circumstances and the environment that it finds itself, right? Which we are constantly building for ourselves based on what society tells us is the status quo. So our bodies now are having to deal with all the external and self-imposed stressors, and it kind of has to function on a hierarchy. And so it's going to, the disease processes that are going to start happening is your body's way to survive the best it can. And again, keep you the most comfortable that it can in the process. And eventually it's going to run out of those resources and those maneuvers. And that's when you're going to start feeling the symptoms. And hopefully that's when you start to identify what are the root causes that are contributing to the illness and try to reverse some of those. And of course, ideally on a preventative model, as you stated, we want to be mindful for that ahead of time and watch out for the tiny little symptoms before they really become a full-blown disease. And that's where the energetic part comes in. So on an emotional level, there's a lot of signs that maybe you are dealing with that you just don't think is a sign or symptom. And when we divorce, again, the mental, the spiritual aspects of health from the physical, it becomes very difficult to navigate, right? Like, I'm going to my therapist for my mental health, and then I'm going to the gym for my physical health, you know, and so it does become harder to track when we divide and conquer like that. And in reality, there's lots of different theories about the interconnectedness, but the thing is, it is all interconnected. So the physical will affect the spiritual and the mental, and vice versa. They all work together. And whichever one is maybe like the first to show a symptom, it is only a matter of time before the other ones will probably also be affected.
I think you're right. The body's amazing how much it can take and still function. And stress is probably one of the main things that most of us deal with. And that seems to segue to things like depression and anxiety. And mental health has become one of the major medical issues, I think, that a lot of us are facing. So from a an herbal standpoint, is there anything that people can do to try to control their stress? Any kind of herb that would support the body, which would help us create more reserves so that we don't end up in a disease state?
Yes, definitely. Herbs can be a great ally in this department. And I think the first thing I want to share is the practical side of the symptoms and the root cause medicine that we talk about in functional medicine and other types of holistic approaches is we first want to understand, again, what's causing the symptoms or the dysfunction, the discomfort, right, the dis-ease. And so normally we would look at both the internal and external factors. And if we can control the external ones, that will be a huge, huge support. So if there's any way that you can lighten your literal stress load off your plate, like if you identify it's your job that's making you unhappy and stressed, can you take off a little bit of hours, right? Can you go to part-time? You know, so just kind of considering what are the resources out there that you can maybe exert some control over? Is there any way that you can look for other support systems from social services or other kinds of opportunities in your community, perhaps, or your family that can take over some of those stressors and help you deal with it on a practical level? That's number one that I always like to look at. And then number two, well, how can you change your own resilience to the stress or even your own perspective around the stress? How can you think about it differently? And how can you maybe train your body to deal with it differently and experience a lighter load, even though the load stayed the same, right? So that's the more like subjective internal work. And that's exactly where herbs can come in. So when it comes to stress, supporting the adrenals is very, very important. And that's more of a long-term strategy. So making sure you have those quote unquote reserves, kind of like your savings account in the bank. And your adrenals are responsible for your stress hormones, as well as other hormones and inflammation in the body, and the way that you're actually going to feel as far as like energy throughout the day to day. And it also will be very important to look at your sleep. So supporting your sleep, making sure you're getting deep sleep, and there's lots of herbs that we can talk about too, for sleep support. And then for adrenal support, things like caffeine really don't help with our reserves. So I really like to wean off caffeine as much as possible, or other types of stimulants that people use to get them by the day to day, and instead switch over to gentle adaptogens like Eleuthero or ashwagandha or holy basil. And then we want to also support you in the moment. So when you're actually feeling stress or a panic attack or something like that, there can be some herbs that you carry around, like a tincture. And you can take some under your tongue, and it can really help you relax the nervous system immediately. So things like skullcap or passion flower in a low dose, in a higher dose, that could be a great sleep aid. So those are my go-tos. But even something as gentle as chamomile that we mentioned before can be great as a tea or tincture for people.
And what about in terms of getting deep sleep? I mean, people always turn to melatonin, but is that the end all be all?
Yeah, melatonin, I think, has become quite controversial. And I like to use it sparingly because I am a purist at heart as an herbalist. So I do like to use precursors as much as possible in whole food and whole herb form, like I mentioned. So for melatonin, things that would support production would include things like tart cherry, so you can get the juice. And it's great for all kinds of inflammatory processes. And there's lots of research on tart cherry by itself. So whether you're eating the fruit or drinking the juice or taking another supplement with tart cherry, that could be a good precursor. And then making sure that you are eating protein-rich meals with complete amino acids that will make sure that you're getting enough serotonin, which then will form into melatonin down its chain of events. And what I would say about deep sleep is it's it very much depends on your adrenals too. So making sure that your adrenals are waking up in the morning with the sun and you're getting the cortisol awakening response, and then you're sort of winding down throughout the day. And as the darkness does come on, your circadian should allow for proper melatonin production to help you wind down. So that means that we do want to expose ourselves to the rhythm of the sun as much as possible and correlate with that. And of course, not everybody can do that with night shift and different kinds of work schedules. But if you can, it would be great to look outside first thing in the morning, or even take like a 5-minute walk outside or on your balcony or something like that, and also look at the sunset as well to kind of let your body know it's time to wind down, and then limit your blue light exposure and screen exposure after, I would say, like 8 p.m. And, you know, a lot of us are scrolling at different times of day, so it does take a certain amount of discipline, but this is the kind of subtle thing that can really disrupt our circadian rhythm. So besides herbs, this is just great sleep hygiene things to watch out for. But melatonin is really helpful in higher doses for inflammatory types of processes, dealing with acute illnesses. It can be helpful.
Oh, I didn't know that. And from the immune side of this, because we're going to be coming into cold and flu season soon, is there anything that naturally can boost our immune system so it has more reserve? Or we give it the building blocks so that it can ramp up when it needs to?
Yeah, we can definitely do both. So from a Chinese medicine perspective, herbs like astragalus are great, and medicinal mushrooms are also great. And lots of other immunomodulating herbs and plants that we can sort of take year round, but especially during and right before cold and flu season. And then we can take some gentle lymphatic supporting and stimulating herbs like echinacea is a famous one during signs of acute, first signs of acute illness, or even, you know, during times when you think your body will be more stressed. Like, let's say you are getting a little bit less sleep or you're experiencing more stress, then you can take something like that as a sort of preventative. And things like elderberry, they have a lot of evidence in elderberry regarding supporting the immune system and also acting as an antiviral and antimicrobial. Of course, we have garlic, you know, that's kind of a panacea of things. And some people can't tolerate raw garlic. So that's just a consideration. Ginger, you know, all of these things that you actually will probably see in cold and flu natural products, they do have a lot of evidence behind them, and we can use them in cooking too. So we don't necessarily need to go out and get all the supplements. We can try to incorporate them into foods, or things like fire cider could be great in the winter season.
And is there anything to support the lung function so that you can act like a mucolytic, you know, so you can thin out your mucus, so if you do get an upper or lower respiratory infection, you can cough it out?
Yeah, so there's a supplement that is reportedly doing just that called N-acetylcysteine. And the amino acid in there, the cysteine, is actually a sulfur-based one. And so the allein that's in garlic and onion and other kinds of allium plant family, vegetables, I guess I'll call them, plants, they will actually support your body in making its own cysteine. And that's what really helps with the thinning out of the mucus, like you mentioned, and allowing the body to cough it out or clear the nasal passages. Traditionally, again, garlic was rubbed on feet as well, or having like a garlic or an onion poultice on the chest can be great for that as well, and opening up the lungs. And then other lung herbs that I like are mullein is a go-to of mine, and that could be for all types of coughs to help expectorate and thin it out, and also just soothe the lungs as well.
It's amazing, all this wealth of things that you don't need to go to the pharmacy to get, and that if you are knowledgeable, you can really be your own physician a lot of times and get yourself out of trouble before you end up getting into it. So on that note, let's take our last break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Buksov. And again, you have a podcast, right? And how can people listen to it? Because you have a bunch of information on those.
Yeah, it's called the Holistic Pharmacy Podcast. And I interview professionals that are mostly coming from the conventional field and are now doing work in the holistic field or building practices. And I just interviewed their perspectives and their journey and their point of view. And you really learn so much from people like that, that kind of are well-rounded, I feel. So I think it's a great, great listening experience if you want to check it out.
I love that. I mean, it's about learning from each other. There's so much specialization and everybody's a master in their own theater, but ultimately you don't know what you don't know unless you speak with people. So, you know, that's the thing about healthcare to me is that it's a learning process. You never learn everything, but if you can take in one or two pieces of information and apply it and help your patients, and in some instances help yourself, to me, that's the best thing ever.
Absolutely. And, you know, I want to go back to what you shared earlier about, you know, not necessarily needing a pharmacy when so much is readily abundant in nature. And there's some theories that I heard about regarding water, right? Just drinking more water can do wonders, especially if it's quality water, good quality, with some minerals and electrolytes dissolved in there. And a lot of times people are just not consuming enough water. So when we talk about thinning the mucus, the first thing is, you know, drinking more water. Or whenever you go to a healer or even a conventional doctor, a lot of times they'll tell you drink more water after this session or drink more water in general. I'm not going to write you a prescription. And I hear people complaining about it. And I actually think those are some of the best doctors that tell you that advice, because you know, who else are you going to hear it from? Sometimes it's just nice to have that additional authority figure, so to speak, in your life to affirm something simple that you already know. But that will hopefully motivate you to take them up on it, because sometimes you don't need another prescription, and especially something that we're finding out has so many side effects, such as an antibiotic. So, it really is going to require all of us to practice discernment and stewardship over that hierarchy that I mentioned in the beginning, over what we choose to do first, second, and third.
Well, in that vein, you know, you mentioned at the beginning of the show that it's about finding someone, an herbalist and a functional medicine doctor, somebody who's knowledgeable. Is there, you know, I'm speaking with somebody right now. I have no question about that. And I would be happy to refer patients to you. If I don't know something, I know that you're a colleague who can help me. But is there another way that people can start doing their own research? Do they, any kind of book that you can recommend, or a course that they can take that they can, because we talked about, you have to put some skin in the game. And that means you have to become a student. I don't think anybody really picks up things and takes in them and runs with them if you just spoon feed them. But if you actually spend the time, the discernment comes from knowledge. So how would you recommend that people start the process?
Yeah, you know, there's so many resources out there, and I think this field is only growing. And again, I really love the direction of becoming more self-sufficient. And there's even a saying, I forget who coined it, that the doctor of the future is you. And I really believe that that's the right direction. I believe that we have always been the primary source and will continue to be so. It's just about recognizing it and trusting ourselves as that steward and best guide for our own selves and our own journey. But how do we help ourselves and equip ourselves to make the right and the best decisions? Well, again, it just goes back to, I think, more information. And because, like you said, it's quite difficult to trust that you have all the information available, because there's just so much of it, right? It's at our fingertips. And now with AI, we can just learn whatever it is that we want. So the thing is, how do we use that information? How do we get the best and most concise, I would say, information too, that is actually actionable and you can implement it? So again, I do believe that the best shortcut is to work with a practitioner that can help you with the specific tools that you need or that may be most supportive for whatever it is that you're dealing with. And again, prioritizing, right? So you may have some ideas about what the priorities are, but it might be just really helpful for somebody else to take a look and share their experience. And even when we talk about second opinions, right? Like, you want to maybe shop around and see a couple of people and then see whoever resonates and then work with them for a period of time until you feel that you truly have all the tools and you can now navigate yourself. And then maybe from time to time, you might need some maintenance and tune-ups. And so truly, I do think that's the best investment of your time and resources and money is to get a mentor, whatever field we're talking about, whether it's health or not. But I will mention a few people that I look up to. And again, there's a plethora of them, even on social media. So I quoted Michael Pollan already. He's a journalist and he has a lot of books on food, right? So one of his most famous is In Defense of Food, and then there's Omnivore's Dilemma. And so I do think that that's a great starting point because, again, you probably can't survive on just herbs, but you do need to eat food. So that's a very, very important starting point. And then another person who's a huge authority figure in the functional medicine space is Dr. Mark Hyman. So he's written a bunch of books and you can follow him on social media. And so he does give a very scientific approach, but definitely aligns with everything that we talked about today. And then I'll also mention Deanna Minich, and she's somebody that I recently started to follow. And she talks about the rainbow diet and how correlating the colors and the saturation of colors in foods, mostly plant foods, it really does correlate with the level and quality of their phytochemicals, which is true. And then she also correlates them to the chakra systems, which is also true. And so I really like following her work. And it's also quite, you know, spiritual along with scientific. So I will mention those three sources.
I think that's a great place to start. And just to reiterate for the listeners, I guess it's the consults that you, do you also offer courses that people can take with you?
I do. So again, most of my courses are geared toward professionals that want to start practicing herbalism, but I do have like a mini intro course that anyone can take and you can learn all about what we've been talking about today. So some safety evidence concerns, as well as legalities, and going through a sort of clinical process as a practitioner or a patient, that can be helpful.
I think it's just wonderful what you do because it's so thoughtful and it's meeting the patients where they are and the doctors for that matter. And knowledge for the entire healthcare, from a healthcare perspective, I think we have to be aggressive now, where we're as physicians and as any kind of practitioner, that you have to be an advocate for your patient and you can't do it if you don't know. And my biggest pet peeve, and I'm sure you probably would agree with me, is the practitioner who doesn't know and then will poo-poo it because they don't know it. So if they don't know it, it doesn't exist or it's not helpful. I just find that to be just emotionally lazy. And I hope patients will take a step back if they ever have that experience.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. And I've had the same experience as a patient as well, navigating healthcare myself and finding that people just blanket statement that it doesn't work when they are just kind of ignorant about it or they don't take the time to go and research it. And so it's just easier to pretend that there's not enough information, but they just haven't even taken the time or initiative to go and learn. And I think as practitioners, it is our duty, again, with the Hippocratic Oath, to do no harm and to get as much information as possible in order for us to make the best recommendation and also to allow the patient to make the best decision for them with all the information that is disclosed.
I couldn't have said that better. And unfortunately, we have to stop because time goes way too fast. When you're having fun, right? So in the minute that we have left, again, how can people reach you? How can they listen to your podcast?
So please find me on my website, marinabooksof.com, marinabooksov.com. And you can click into my podcast there. It's called the Holistic Pharmacy Podcast. And thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I can't wait to have you back on again.
Take care.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.